WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
And welcome back in. Hour number three of the program here on Monday morning, and that means it is time to welcome in New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo for the hour. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing all right. I will say, you know, we haven't had plowable snow until you become City Council President, so it's all your fault, I guess. We got to finally dip into that budget.
Yeah, well, you know, I will say that I think our Department of Public Infrastructure did an amazing job. Our roads are looking great. There were very few complaints, if any. So I will say that because, you know, in other years past when we did have to plow the streets, we got a lot of calls like, they missed my street, especially, the side streets that aren't necessarily the main roads. So I want to, you know, really thank the men and women out there in DPI that do a lot of the work out there to make sure we're safe and keep our roads clean and clear and drivable.
Yeah, I mean, it's helpful when the storm comes at a time when most people aren't traveling and they can get out there and they can. But the important part is people keeping up with the parking ban.
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular case, there were probably people who felt like, oh, I don't need to, you know, it's not going to snow as much as they say it is. And it turns out that it did. So the parking ban was necessary. And I think that, you know, the more people that can obey that, as much as it sucks to have to deal with, you know, it makes it a lot easier to get your street plowed and get you moving along.
Yes.
And, you know, we have that. We used to have that story every year after there was a snow ban. We would say, okay, we call up the police. How many cars were ticketed? How many cars were towed? And we would put that story up. And then I was like, let's stop doing this. Let's, like, not celebrate people that are stupid and don't want to listen to what they're telling you. So.
Yeah, sometimes it's difficult too. I think a lot of counselors probably have the same situation where we get a lot of phone calls about people not understanding which side of the road, and is it the one with the fire hydrant or without? That's usually like the easiest fail safe. It's like the side without the fire hydrant that, you know, you park on. Or if you live on a main road, it's like neither side of the street can you park on. And it's, you know, a lot of times we get the same recurring questions.
Well, listen, I don't want to make the city spend any more money than is necessary, but I would recommend every side street should have a sign on it. Park on this side when there's a snow ban.
Yeah.
Because the instructions that the city sends out are kind of confusing.
A little convoluted.
If you don't have a hydrant on your street, park on. If it's an east-west running street, park on the north side. People don't know directions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're not going to pull out a compass to try to figure it out. So I think signage would make it a lot easier for people.
That's a good note.
Take the money that you got from towing them all away. And utilize it for that. So there's a bunch of meetings this week for the council. It's going to be a busy week.
Yeah, I was going to say, we start off tonight, actually. The first meeting of the week is our housing committee meeting, which is now chaired by Councilor-at-Large Ian Abreu. That one, it's probably going to be a pretty involved meeting. We're going to have a discussion, I think, about ADUs again. There are some changes, I think, coming down from the state level. I'm not sure what the administration wants to do yet. I had spoken with Jennifer Carlani a little bit during the State of the City address, but we haven't followed up since then on what changes they may want to make to the ADU. So I don't know if there has been any update since then. So we may not have much further discussion during this meeting, but if any changes were going to be made, I'm sure they'll be made in the ordinance committee meeting. So we'll see what further developments we'll hear during that item tonight. But then the other discussion is a motion, obviously, that was made by Councilor Gomes, which is framed around what the administration is doing about the housing crisis that we have here in the city and, you know, more directly around our unhoused population. So I think Director Josh Amaral will most likely refer to the Technical Assistance Collaborative Report, more easily referred to as the TAC report. So we'll probably most likely get into that tonight, which will be probably the bulk of the meeting. So we'll probably dive into that a lot more. And then a lot of the other items there you'll see will most likely be sending to no further action, one of which obviously is the rent stabilization discussion, which I think I got into a little bit on our first interview, you and I. And I guess I'll just kind of reiterate again, the reason why we're going to be sending it to no further action is essentially just looking at what's going on at on Beacon Hill. We know that the Boston City Council, who they had overwhelming support for their rent stabilization ordinance, as well as their mayor. They sent what they call a home rule petition up to the state legislature to pass it to allow for their city government to enact a rent stabilization ordinance. And it's just been sitting in their housing committee, not going anywhere. And so it's just looking like, you know, the Beacon Hill does not want to do anything or touch anything when it comes to rent stabilization. And as we know, our city government is not very favorable to rent stabilization at all. So it really would be an uphill battle to even try to attempt anything in that regard. So right now, I think the better framework is to send something like that to no further action and to focus more so on actionable, tangible items like zoning reform changes, as I mentioned earlier, the ADU changes and other things we can do to help streamline and make it easier for developers to come in, build more housing, and make it so that we can build and provide more units for people and try to alleviate some of this housing crisis we have.
And I know some of the proposed ADU changes allow for, you know, the building of these, whether it be internal or external, on some of these properties that normally wouldn't have been allowed to do it based on the lot size.
Yes, and that's one of the biggest changes, because our city has always had an accessory, by the way, I should have probably mentioned ADU stands for accessory dwelling unit. And some people, back the way our ADU used to be formatted here in the city, most people just refer to it as kind of an in-law suite, because we only allowed it within the structure of the home. It couldn't change the square footage of the home. And most people just, you know, change their basement or attic into kind of like, oh, here's like an additional apartment. But now, as you mentioned, we've expanded it. So you can make it like, you know, a garage in the backyard. You can fit it to have a bathroom and a shower and kind of change it into an apartment style. Now, the other further discussions that we're kind of having now are about parking requirements. And that's become a major issue. This whole week, really, I would say all of the meetings we have, because then the following meeting on Tuesday, tomorrow, is public safety. We're going to have discussions around housing, because we're bringing in the owner of the House of Hope, which we know is a shelter here in the city, to discuss about that. So that really has a lot to do with housing or housing support, I would say, for our own house. And then even for Wednesday's meeting for city property, that has a lot to do with housing, because the city properties that we own, some of the former city school buildings, and then also a building across on Purchase Street for the across from the Quest Center, we're looking to enter into a RFP bid process to turn into housing. So really this whole week, as we start off, our city council committee meetings are really focused and geared on housing. Oh, I lost my whole train of thought there.
Well, I was, just to go back to the ADUs for a second, one question that has come up is, so does that mean that, you know, these tiny homes that are all the rage, would that be something that would then be permissible in New Bedford?
Well, technically, tiny homes they're still format. It just depends on, again, all the other factors that come into it. You'd have to pull the permit, and then if it's formatted within whatever, what lot you decide you want to build it on, is it allowed within that particular lot? And then all the other things I had mentioned, like parking requirements and all the other things that come with pulling that permit. But that's a part of the other things that we want to look at streamlining, is making it easier to go through the permitting process and all the different departments that you have to go through for approval, to make it a lot easier, or not easier, because it shouldn't just be easy to go pull a permit and build something. We want to make sure that, you know, when you go build something in a neighborhood, it's not going to disrupt what's already there. You know, especially if if you live in a neighborhood now, a lot of our communities, people who have owned their properties have lived here for decades, for generations. So we don't want situations where people are just coming here, buying a particular plots of land and building whatever they want. You want to make sure if you are building something, it fits into the neighborhood, it's structurally sound and things like that. So whenever we're talking about making things easier and quicker for people to build, we're not saying cut corners and things like that. I want to make sure that's clear, but more so that we're removing so-called the red tape. So we're not making it more obstructive for people to come in. But yes, essentially, I think we could have that discussion about tiny homes and you know, those kind of, because there are certain lot sizes, which that's another discussion I believe we're going to be bringing up in the ordinance committee, is about lot sizes, because we do have a lot of small lots in our city, which technically the way our ordinance is currently set up, we couldn't even build on in the current framework, but a house could fit there. Even if you look at the surrounding houses that are around that particular lot, maybe it's a lot now because there was a fire there previously, the house burned down, but previously there was a three-tenement house standing there. But because of the new current ordinances, we can't build a three-tenement there. So that's absurd, like, because essentially there was a three-tenement house there before. Why can't we just rebuild what was there previously? So we are doing the work now to kind of figure out how do we get the ordinance back around to make it so a three-tenement house can go back where it previously once stood.
And the reason why I asked about tiny homes is because that's an attractive thing for people, because if you're going to spend $20,000, $30,000 to build, you can just order one from Amazon ready to go.
Oh, well, yeah.
And so then they can just deliver it, roll it off, put it in the yard, and you've got all the hookups there. So it will help alleviate some of this a little bit faster. And, you know, you mentioned the lots. You do see a lot of that, whether it be a vacant lot or maybe somebody purchase that lot from the person who owned the house that had burned down, and now they have a yard. And they're looking at this yard and saying, well, I'd much rather build my own three-family home here so I could have that as a rental property. And so you might start to see some of those lots being converted into, you know, looking to convert those into homes.
Well, and that's the other question that we the challenge that we come into is when people are trying to build, they want to make sure it's cost-effective. And so that's the other issue that we talk about, is like, is it profitable to build in New Bedford? So if you're building a single family or a tiny home or whatever the issue may be, you want to make sure, in this case, if you are building, I think it is more profitable to build a three-tenement, because then you could live in the first floor and then rent out the second and third. But if you're only building a single family and you're looking to live in it, you know, the cost is not going to outweigh the benefit of it. So I think that's also why we're looking at trying to make it more feasible for people to have those. And then also it's beneficial to us, because then you're providing more units for people to live in. So it's a win-win in that situation.
And you mentioned House of Hope, and I've been wanting to ask you this because of, you know, your previous years serving as the chair of the housing committee. And also I know your passion for helping the unhoused. There's the Echo Village that's opening up in Providence. These basically, you know, little shed homes that are all on pallets that can all be moved, but they've created a community that's going to open up this week and allow for 45 people to come off the street and have a place to stay for 6 to 12 months that has heat, that has air conditioning, that has, you know, bathroom and laundry facilities. And we've been asking the question, is that something that could be feasible in New Bedford? People were against the idea of putting up a bunch of tents in an area, but this would not be that. This would be a community. This would be actual structures. And then if it didn't work out, they could always just be moved.
And they could be, I actually, this is the first time I'm actually hearing about the Echo, you said Echo?
Echo Village is the name of it, yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah. I would obviously be interested in something like that. I caution to say more, because, you know, I can get myself in trouble for saying that.
I can tell you that we've had, you know, I haven't heard any negative comments from anybody. And you know how it can get here on the radio when you're talking about the homeless situation. Every response that I've gotten from people has been positive. Like, that'd be good. I'd be okay with that. I'd rather give money to that than give money to somebody at the Octopus. And so I think there is an appetite for it, for the discussion to happen.
Yeah, I wonder too, you know, if we had like one of the organizations that we had, like I think of like Rise Up for Homes, and, you know, one of those nonprofit organizations that we have that would help facilitate it. Because that's one of the issues that we run into as a city government whenever we propose these types of ideas. When we say, oh, what if we did have one of these facilities? It's like, well, who would then run it?
Right.
And so that's the first question we always get asked. Even when I met with the mayor about having a homeless encampment site, when we talked about, you know, we need something to help these individuals to have an emergency shelter location. And that was one of the, I agree with him, appropriate question of like, well, if we did put this together, who would run it? Who would have staff it? Especially when we talk about our city government already being understaffed. We don't fill the vacancies we have. We don't have enough people running certain departments. So it's a fair question. So that would be my only you know, concern or one of the things that we'd have to figure out. But I think that's something we should look into, especially because, as I mentioned, our unhoused population continues to grow, continues to suffer here in New Bedford, especially with how cold our winters continue to be year to year. But I would certainly be supportive of something like that. But then the question becomes, where do you put it? And
right.
then you have not in my backyard or not mm-hmm. in my ward, and then that's where I would get myself in trouble, as we know in the past, of selecting a location. And I'm sure we might get a call of, where would you think we could put it? And I won't fall into that trap again. But yeah, that's certainly something we could most likely discuss and potentially have here in New Bedford.
Providence is putting it right on an on-ramp onto the highway. It's right next to the on-ramp, so you'll see it when you're getting on the on-ramp, and you can probably see it driving by on the highway. And I said, I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess Mayor Mitchell would be vehemently opposed to it being at the Route 18 195 exchange where we've seen tents in the past.
Yeah.
So, but it's a conversation definitely worth having. And we are having a conversation with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. You can give us a call, 508-996-0500. But let's take a break here. We'll be back in a few moments. All right, we're going to be getting back into it with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo in just a moment. Before we do that, though, I got to tell you, man, there's nothing better than when you're coming home from a long day at work and you see that laundry pile building up and you think to yourself, oh, I got to do that. But knowing I can just go and open up my Dash Laundromat app, have them come and pick it up, and then they'll take care of it for me and bring it back to me. That's the best feeling in the world, because I hate laundry more than anything. And now Dash is making it even easier and better to do your laundry with them, because they're introducing their brand new Dash Tote delivery bags. They are weather resistant, durable, and designed with a secure zipper to protect your laundry every step of the way. And they're also rolling out their convenient Dash subscription plans. So you can choose from small, medium, or large totes and have premium detergent options like Tide, Gain, or All. Plus, you can enjoy discounts on comforters, blankets, and other household items. So to find out more, all you have to do is go to DashLaundromat.com, find Dash Laundromat on social media, or just download that Dash Laundromat app. And if you don't want them to come and pick it up, if you want to go and bring it to Dash, you don't even have to worry about going into the store and dropping it off. You can use their convenient lockers. You open them right up with the app, put your clothes in. They're secure, they're safe. They'll take them out of there, they'll wash them, they'll put them back in there and let you know when they're done. So you don't have to worry about going there during the hours they're open. You can go there during the time that it works for you. That's what they try to do at Dash Laundromat. They try to make doing your laundry as painless and as stress-free as possible, and you're going to get it done with Dash. So again, download the Dash Laundromat app or find them online at dashlaundromat.com or on social media. All right, we're going to go into the news right now with Phil Devitt. When we come back, we'll have more with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. We'll take your phone calls, 508-996-0500. We'll take your app chat messages. We'll be back right after the news. Take it away, Phil.
Trump widens his attack on wasteful spending. Not the vacation Royal Caribbean cruisers were hoping for. And what was in your cup last night?
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
President Trump is expanding his wasteful spending probes to include the Department of Education and the military. In a pre-Super Bowl interview with Fox News, Trump said he's directing Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency to expand its probe of fraud, waste, and abuse in the federal government.
Well, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of money that's going to places where it shouldn't be going, where if I read a list, you'd say this is ridiculous, and you've read the same lists, and there are many that you haven't even seen. It's crazy.
Trump said the funding freeze for the U.S. Agency for International Development is only the beginning, and he expects to find hundreds of billions of dollars in wasteful military spending as well. Secretary of State Marco Rubio will visit the Middle East next week. The State Department says Rubio will make his first trip to Israel and the Arab states and will also travel to the Munich Security Conference in Germany. His trip comes after President Trump unveiled his plan to have the U.S. take control of the Gaza Strip and relocate Palestinians to neighboring countries. The plan was quickly condemned by Arab countries and human rights groups. California Senator Adam Schiff calling for firefighters to be exempt from the ongoing federal hiring freeze. President Trump's executive order halted onboarding for thousands of firefighters, and Schiff says it could contribute to staffing issues ahead of the next fire season. Schiff wrote a letter to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which oversees the U.S. Forest Service, imploring them to exempt federal firefighters. This comes after last month's wildfires in California killed at least 29 people, with U.S. Forest Service firefighters credited for saving multiple neighborhoods. A Royal Caribbean cruise ship has docked in Florida with more than 90 sick passengers on board. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Saturday most of the symptoms on the ship docked in Tampa were vomiting and diarrhea and lasted 24 hours. Officials have ruled out the norovirus. The CDC still investigating. Football fans may have noticed the end zones looked a bit different. Last night during the Super Bowl, the NFL said it removed the words "end racism" from the end zones at Caesars Superdome in New Orleans before the big game. Instead, the field featured the phrase "choose love." The game last night was the first Super Bowl since February of 2021 where "end racism" was not used in the end zone. An NFL spokesperson said the phrase is the most fitting following the recent tragedies the country has encountered. And did you drink anything last night? The top drink for Americans on Super Bowl Sunday is traditionally beer, but this year, more Americans apparently chose an alternative. Non-alcoholic beverage sales in the U.S. surged 26% in the past year, topping $800 million. Traditional alcohol sales fell for the first time in 3 years by less than 1%. Most popular alternative for alcohol is non-alcoholic beer, making 84% of total sales in the non-alcoholic beverage category. Research firm Bernstein found that Bud Zero, Athletic Brewing, and Heineken 0.0 are the top three non-alcoholic beverage brands.
WBSM Sports.
How about that Super Bowl? Philadelphia Eagles beat the Kansas City Chiefs last night, 40-22, final score. Boston Celtics in Miami to play the Heat at 7:30 tonight. Bruins back on the 22nd when they play the Anaheim Ducks.
Now, your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Partly cloudy and a high near 32 degrees for your Monday here on the South Coast. On Tuesday, mostly cloudy with a chance of snow again, especially here along the coastline, a high of 33. On Wednesday, partly cloudy, high near 35. And on Thursday, a wintry mix likely with a high around 37 degrees. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM. Get all of our content and breaking news alerts with a WBSM app.
You are listening to the Tim Weisberg Show on WBSM.
And we are back with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo. And, you know, this is a, we were talking about the slate of meetings this week, and it's pretty much every night. You've got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday being the full council meeting, but it's also a night, it's also a week where there's going to be a number of neighborhood meetings as well.
Yeah. So, tonight actually starts off, the West End Neighborhood Group, which is led by Shante Paris. The West End Neighborhood Group meets every second Monday of the month. So every second Monday of the month, the West End Neighborhood Group meets at the Kearney Academy, and that's at 6 p.m. So, and then usually Ward 4 City Councilor Derek Baptiste is there as the council representative. And then later on in this week on Wednesday, so on the second Wednesdays of the month, the Ward 3 Neighborhood Group, which is led by George Ferreira, he meets at the Holy Name of the Sacred Heart of Jesus Community Room, which is located at 129 Mount Pleasant Street. They meet at 6:30 p.m. And our council representative for that is Ward 3 City Councilor Sean Oliver. So those are two neighborhood groups that are happening this week. Then there are other neighborhood groups like Tabor Mills meets on Tuesday, and Olympia Towers, they have a neighborhood group. Those are essentially closed off because they're really meant for the people that live obviously at Tabor Mills or Olympia Towers. But that the Tabor Mills, I believe, happens on Tuesday and the Olympia Towers on Thursday within the second week of each month. But those are also attended by the council and are really meant again, as an opportunity for residents to go and air any grievances or questions or concerns that they might have. whenever they, and it's also an opportunity even for them to reach out to the administration, because there's always a representative from the community service office there. They hand out any press releases that have been out. They also have sometimes for senior citizens, the Young and the Rest of Us, which is like a newsletter they have with crosswords, but also a lot of the happenings that are going on at the senior center. So I always encourage people to get out to our neighborhood meetings to hear what's going on, but also to ask any questions that you might have about city government. So you don't have to, you know, just hear about things last minute, so you can be prepared or to ask questions that you have and to bring things to our attention.
And these are important, too, because it's a chance for you to kind of meet some of your neighbors and realize that some of the problems that you have are problems that they have as well. So, you know, let's just say you're tired of all the problems with parking in your neighborhood. Well, so are these other residents. And if enough of you are getting together and making noise about it, then something can happen.
Yeah. And, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, citizens input time during our city council meetings and other things, in which we do have citizens input time. I want to mention that during our appointments and briefing meeting, I encourage anyone who would like to come and speak before the city council, call our city council office and ask to be put on for citizens input time. But this is another option to you to come to one of these neighborhood groups. There's always a city council representative at one of them, sometimes a lot more than just the one that's assigned to attend. A lot of times, a lot of the at-large counselors and other ward counselors will attend them. And you'll, like I said multiple times before, I think your local government should be the most accessible and most approachable. So that is your other opportunity to really reach out to us and speak to us about any concerns you have.
I know we've gotten complaints in the past from listeners about the citizens input time, that, you know, you have to be on the agenda to speak, and mm-hmm. it's only on that during that one appointments and briefings meeting. And so people are a little bit concerned that they don't have enough of an opportunity to have their voice heard, and that they've got to plan too far in advance to do it. Is there any appetite? I know that you guys have a lot of meetings already, but maybe like one night a month where the floor is open, the microphone is open, and people can come, and there's a 2-hour limit, and it's whatever people want to, you know, want to come and gripe about for 2 hours.
I would say no. Just because I don't see that the appetite is there to even expand it. We, as it is right now, we have a citizens input time that's set up right now for appointments and briefing. And even that one, when people sign up for it, sometimes don't even show up for the meeting that they signed up for. So for me, if there was a groundswell of people signing up for appointments, like the committee appointments and briefing to come before us, and we saw that the list was getting too long, because essentially that particular meeting, to explain a little bit, we're only allowed to give them the first 30 minutes. So then I could make the argument to say, oh, we've had 10 people sign up, and that first 30 minutes really isn't sufficient enough for those 10 people. Then I could say, that's not fair. We need to give them a little bit more time. But as it is right now, occasionally it's the same people we're seeing, mm-hmm. one of which is in the process, well, continuously suing the city and wasting, I think, taxpayer dollars on I won't get into that anyway, but and that same person is coming before us again about the same issue. So and they know how to get in touch with us. So a lot of the times, to me, it sounds as though there really isn't much of an appetite upon the citizens to come before us. So I don't think it's necessary for us to really change the framework of what we already have existing if there really isn't an appetite there for people to come and speak to us, and especially because we have so much going on. I know a lot of people don't think that the city council does a lot of work, but we do. And especially during certain points of the year, especially as the budget season's coming up and other a lot of other ordinance changes and other plans that come out, we have a lot of business before us, especially during a city council meeting. A lot of the work happens in committee meetings, and then it comes before us during our city council meetings that happen on the second and fourth Thursday of the month. And so during those meetings, depending on the packed agenda, it can be a very involved and long meeting. So trying to jam-pack then an additional citizens input time during that meeting can be a lot. So until I were to see an appetite from the citizens of really wanting to come and speak to us, at this time, I don't see the need for us to add it.
And I can tell you, as you know, somebody who has covered city council meetings or been watching them on TV to report on them the next day, I'm kind of glad that there isn't that, because there is a lot of stuff to cover, and it already does go late. But I think, you know, like you said, there's plenty of opportunities for citizens to have their voice heard, but it does start at that neighborhood meeting level, because mm-hmm. that's where you're going to have the time to speak. That's where you're going to, and you might even find out the answer to your issue at that level before it even has to go up the chain mm-hmm. to a council meeting.
And even at these neighborhood meetings, as I haven't even touched on how many representatives there are there. So there's our state representative levels as well, because you have, at the Bullard Street, or excuse me, the North End neighborhood, now neighborhood meeting that it's called, which is run by Scott Pemberton, you have State Representative Chris Hendricks that also joins that meeting. You have the police officer, now I'm blanking on his name. I apologize, now I can't think of his name. But so you have police officers, you have the state level representation, you have city council, local government, you have oftentimes a representative from the mayor's office. So you have a lot of people there in one room sitting at this table ready to take your responses, questions, answers. So there's no better time than a neighborhood meeting. And there used to be a time when these neighborhood meetings were really flourishing. And I understand people's schedules are busy. It's hard to kind of, after a long work day, you have to make dinner and, you know, to get out of the house to get to these meetings. It is challenging. But and we often see when there is a bigger issue, people do come out in droves for it, for that particular issue. But I think it's important to highlight these neighborhood groups because of the community leaders like Shante Paris or George Ferreira, who are putting in the work to make sure these run every single month, are being recognized for the work that they're doing, and that people, the citizens, know that there are plenty of opportunities for them to get their input and reach their local officials.
And I think part of it is that, you know, you just have, it's a generational thing. Mm-hmm. Like when you have younger folks, they're not as involved in it. And eventually they will be, as they become property owners or as they become more invested in the community, then they'll want to go and be a more active part. But as you said, you know, most of the time people are just trying to get to work, come home, feed the family, and maybe watch a little TV before they go to bed. They don't even have time to think about all of these issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, eventually you like to think that there'll be new people that come in and get involved and get active. But we see it happen with a lot of organizations where, as the older folks who take part in that no longer take part, there isn't somebody picking up the slack. So I'm glad that there are still people that are running these meetings and hopefully going out there and kind of, for lack of a better term, recruiting people to come to the meeting, you know, making them aware of the fact that it's there and that that's the place to go and air any issues that they have. Mm-hmm. And we can always take your issues here as well. 508-996-0500. We're going to take a break and be back in a few moments. All right. We are back with New Bedford City Council President Shane Burgo, and we'll take your calls at 508-996-0500. Let's go to the phones. Good morning. You are on with Council President Burgo.
Good morning, my friend. Congratulations. I haven't gotten to talk to you or see you since the new position.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, I can attest that even before you literally got elected your first time, you was already at the old Bullard Street meeting.
Oh, of course,
you
yes.
always showed support there, and I know that, and it's a good thing. Any updates on the Mona Lounge on where things stay there?
No, at this time, it's still closed down. Our next appointment and briefings meeting will be reviewing Richard McHugh for the licensing board. And I assume once the licensing board is back up and running, then we'll leave it up to the licensing board to review and potentially have restrictions on the reopening of Mona Lounge, and have a closer look at the safety concerns around the facility.
Because I remember about a year and a half ago when there was that situation where someone got stabbed and a police officer was involved in that next meeting. It was like that weekend, and then we had our meeting, and you would come in early, and you, me, and the police officer were talking about it. So, yeah, so it's not like it was an isolated incident.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, obviously, in this situation. I don't believe that the Mona Lounge necessarily is obviously involved in any particular violence. It's just security might need to be tightened up, or maybe we have to review the type of hours that the facility is being run. The other two, I think, concerns is just, you know, around the type of population that's attending, of how many people are coming in. Or I think there was concern around people letting people into certain doors that they shouldn't have let in. So it's challenging because obviously the business is suffering. And beyond that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that there's a lot of New Bedford residents that are employed there that are out of a job right now. So a lot of people are being affected by this closure. So hopefully we can get them back up and running and supported.
All right. Okay, thank you, my friend. Good luck.
Thank you for the call. Yeah, that's the thing that I think is lost in a lot of people is they hear, you know, more in a lounge and they think, okay, it's a nightclub, it's a bar, but it's a restaurant during the day. Mm-hmm. And as part of this closure, they're not even allowed to operate as a restaurant anymore. So that means all those people are out of work. There's no income coming in. From what I understand, you know, it was closed under the authority of the police chief, but I don't see anything in the law for him to have any kind of review process for it, that he just closes it and then it's going to sit idle until the licensing board can review everything. So it is going to be held up until that happens. And you said Richard McHugh is on the next agenda. What about Jimmy D?
So Jimmy D has finally been submitted to us. So he'll appear on the city council meeting for this Thursday.
Okay.
And then most likely will be referred to committee. And I'm hoping at this point should make it for the filing deadline to make it on the next appointments and briefing meeting. So potentially, depending on what my colleagues, because I can't speak for all of them, I assume he'll follow the same course of action that Richard McHugh did, which will be referred to appointments and briefing. So then essentially Jimmy D and Richard McHugh will be before us in appointments and briefing. And depending on how that vote shapes out, they'll be referred out of committee, depending on... assuming a favorable recommendation back to the city council for the next city council meeting, then for a final appointment and approval.
And the important, it doesn't matter if they're both at the same time anyway, because you only need a second person
Correct.
For them to be able to hold meetings.
Correct, yeah. And essentially the hope is that we can get them back on and running for a March meeting.
And then they'll have a whole bunch of business in front of them, I'm sure.
Yes, so a lot pending in the licensing board.
And so, and I know that we were talking about the meetings again this week. It's housing tonight. It's public safety and neighborhoods tomorrow. It's city property on Wednesday, and then a full council meeting on Thursday.
Yes.
So, as you said, you know, obviously housing will be a big part of this week. What are some of the other issues that you're hoping to tackle? Maybe not necessarily right away, but, you know, here in the early goings.
I think there's a lot going on really in our city. I think the next thing that you're going to see us discussing too, especially in the city property meeting, is the Advanced Manufacturing Center, AMC, up at the old golf course, most people refer to as. I believe the city property meeting will be holding another meeting sometime this month. I have Councilor Maria Giesta is the committee chair for that. She's going to be looking to work with the administration to try to schedule something because they want to be able to open up the RFP bidding process to try to get some excitement around it so we can apply for some grants. The particular, I believe it's the one-stop Massachusetts grant, I believe is the name. I'm blanking. I don't have my notes, but that's one other particular item I think is really important that will be coming up, because when we talk about, for example, taxes, a lot of times we talk about it in the framework of cutting, but we really should be talking about it in the framework of bringing in revenue, because that's more of an important way of trying to reduce the tax burden, I think, on everyone, is bringing in more revenue as opposed to cutting spending. That's obviously the more easier controlled way of trying to control taxes, but the better way, the long-term way, is bringing more revenue. So hopefully that the AMC will be successful. But that's something else we'll see. I think the other, I recently just had my meeting with the mayor for the first time last week. It was a very productive meeting. And one of the things I said to him when he asked me a similar question to you is, you know, what's on your agenda for this upcoming year? And the first thing I said to him was just, I want to be productive. I want this to be a very productive year. I want to get a lot done for the people of New Bedford. So that means we need to have open communication between everyone, between my colleagues, between the administration, between the people of New Bedford. So making sure we all work together to accomplish and achieve as much as possible.
All right, we got to take our final break of this hour. We'll be back in a few moments. All right, so we've got Valentine's Day coming right up around the corner, and don't wait until the last minute. Get over to the Potting Bench Florists and Gifts in Fairhaven right now. Well, not now, wait till they open, but get on over there and make sure that you have Danielle and the team over there help you get the perfect gift for Valentine's Day. Don't be caught empty-handed. Don't be caught driving around looking for gas station flowers on the afternoon of. They'll make sure that you have the perfect gift. If you need them delivered on Friday, though, the delivery vans and drivers are ready to go. All you need to do is get your order to the Potting Bench today. Don't be the husband or the boyfriend that didn't send those flowers on Valentine's Day. Be the guy that sends them first thing in the morning, or, like I said, the day before. Then you can really surprise her. Not only can you send your sweetheart some flowers, but you can add candles, chocolates, lotions, a teddy bear, or if you want, even an embarrassing display of flowers and balloons, call the Potting Bench Florists and Gifts, and they'll help you find the perfect over-the-top gift and have it delivered on Valentine's Day. So again, the perfect gift is waiting for you at Potting Bench Florists and Gifts, and let the staff help you figure out how to despoil the ones you love. To Sarah's Way in the CVS Plaza, Fairhaven, or at PottingBenchFloristFairhaven.com. All right, that's it, Council President Schoenberger. We are out of time, but thank you for coming in, and we will have you come back next week and talk more about some of these meetings that are happening this week, and we can talk about where we go from there.
Sounds good. We'll be back on President's Day, so I am very excited about that. You know, a whole day dedicated to me.
And you still...